Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox. I'd like to welcome you to this episode of Unfair and Unbalanced, a podcast with Roy Snell and Tom Fox. Today finds us on location at the SCCE Utilities and Energy Conference in Houston, Texas. We had the chance to sit down and visit with Roy and record a couple podcasts. So, Roy, why don't we just get right into it?
All right, sir.
Roy, I heard a presentation you made earlier where you listed out what you call generally accepted compliance principles, although then you amended it to Roy Snell's generally accepted compliance principles.
Yes.
And I found it a really interesting formulation, and you had a very kind of sharp dividing line that I thought was really useful for not only compliance practitioners, but for senior managers, executives, and board of directors to understand the role of compliance now as opposed to what compliance did 20 years ago and led to some of the financial failures of the 90s and aughts. So why don't you tell us about that?
Well, there's really, I basically try and describe an entire compliance program on a single page, and I have a flow. It's not necessarily how compliance works, but, you know, that we start out with expectations like the rule of law, ethical behavior. We have prevention such as education. We look for problems such as auditing. We evaluate the problems we find through investigations. And then where we get to the part that is different now from 20 years ago is the follow-up, corrective action, enforcement, discipline, reporting to the board, and sometimes legally required disclosures to the enforcement community. And I try and use this for a number of reasons, but one is to help people understand the answer to the biggest question for me is, if you want to know what your job is as a compliance officer, you got to ask, why are we here? What was it that happened that caused a whole profession to be created? And more importantly, what were people not doing in the past that they're doing now that you're expected to do, or the thing that caused the profession to be created, or the most important part of the job, which is the corrective action, enforcement, and discipline, reporting to the board, and disclosure on occasion. In the past, I think we had a lot of enthusiasm about education. People would love to teach. People would love to talk about building an ethical culture. They wanted to talk about policies and controls. We had auditing, risk assessment, investigations. Most tools that a compliance program used have been around since forever. And what's different now is the expectation of a compliance officer is, and you're supposed to finish. Unlike Enron, WorldCom, Tyco, HealthSouth, everybody points fingers at who their favorite villain is and all that. To me, it's who failed to convince leadership to fix the problem they found. They knew these problems existed for years. So this thing you ask about, Tom, this thing below the line, this thing that separates compliance officers from all those who came before them, is once you find the problem, you don't just point at it and go back to your office, which is something that's been done a lot of times. You go to leadership and say it has to be fixed. That's why we're here. That's why our profession is here.
You know, the other thing that struck me as you explained that is that would seem to me to be a very good and even important justification in the differences in compliance and legal.
Right.
Because, as you said, legal's been around forever, at least since the Greek democracy of 400 BC. And a large job is not to remediate. It's to perhaps find, perhaps investigate, and protect the company
right
going forward. And it's not to remediate. And that's part of the integrated approach that you suggested for a compliance program, that really you can't take a third-party program in a vacuum. You can't take training in a vacuum. You can't take intentions expressed in a code of conduct in a vacuum. It has to be an integrated approach.
I would challenge anybody, if they want to see what a compliance officer is supposed to do, look at the congressional hearings in which leadership from these various companies, Enron, WorldCom, Tyco, HealthSouth, were, they weren't all there, but many of them were hauled in front of some committee of Congress, and they were asked a bunch of questions. Generally speaking, they were all asked, did you know? Law would say yes. What'd you do? I told somebody. Why didn't you fix it? Not my job. And it's pretty strange to watch a recording with the chair of the audit committee, the chair of the board, the general counsel, the CEO, the CFO, all say, not my job. I mean, one weird way to put it is, we're here because we started having all these problems. The reputation of all business in the United States, frankly, around the world, was at an all-time low. Well, why? Because we have a lot of fines and penalties, people are breaking law, doing unethical things. Well, who's supposed to fix that? And they looked around, and there was a lot of great jobs going on. I mean, CEOs, CFOs, board positions, auditors, ethicists. And they said, which one of you is supposed to fix this? And the answer kind of came out pretty often, nobody. And that's why we are where we are today.
And really, the past and present delineation also leads to another topic I wanted to maybe see if we can explore today, is there's always a fair amount of debate on who the CCO should report to.
Oh, yeah.
And we had that debate a little bit this morning around the idea of how are you evaluated, rated, and have your salary set by somebody that you could more than probably have to investigate, or at least be within a realm of investigation, and what's the conflict of interest there? So why don't, I know you had some thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm glad you used the word conflicts of interest, Tom, because that's another way of describing why our profession is here. Those who came before us on occasion had conflicts of interest. Or another way to use the word conflict of interest in this context is to say that you can look at the root of almost every problem that didn't get fixed for years. Enron, WorldCom, Tyco, HealthSouth, Penn State University. How could these people have not fixed these problems? And in part, it was a conflict of interest. So again, society has said in the last 20 years, we're going to create this new position called the compliance officer and have this new thing called the compliance program, and they're going to prevent, find, and fix ethical and regulatory problems. And we have to make sure that we put this person in this program in a place that can succeed or that doesn't repeat the problems in the past. If one of the problems in the past is people were conflicted, you got to be careful who you're going to have the compliance officer report to. It has to be as independent as the day is long. It should be as independent as the auditor. This country has gone through quite a big harangue in the last 10-15 years over auditor independence, and we settled on the audit committee of the board as to be the place where the auditor reports to. Instead of this sort of discussion, what I hear is people saying, well, you know, it's all about the rule of law, and the legal department knows more about the rule of law than anybody else. Well, of course they do. But it's not all about the rule of law. It's all about preventing, finding, and fixing problems. And if you think compliance programs are all about the rule of law, then you're probably going to run them the way you ran things 20 years ago, and it isn't going to work. Look at it this way. What I wish people would discuss isn't how much compliance is about the rule of law or audit, and it should report there, or ethics, and it should report there, is that it needs independence, and to discuss independence of the compliance officer, you have to discuss at least three things every time you have this discussion. And I find sometimes people who wanted to report to the legal department refuse to discuss these three things. And one is, who should do the annual review? And actually, you know, people have no problem saying, well, the general counsel or someone in the legal department could do that. But they're not thinking of the next two questions. One is, well, what if there's a hotline complaint about a problem that occurred 3 years prior that involved a legal decision made by someone in the legal department? And when I put this what if to people who want to have the compliance officer report to the general counsel, they say, well, then we build a wall. Well, you can build all the walls you want. You can put the general counsel in Bolivia and the compliance officer in the Antarctic or something and do this investigation. But at the end of the year, the general counsel or somebody who reports to him has to do the compliance officer's performance evaluation. You simply can't investigate people who your performance evaluation is going to be done by. It's as in consistent a concept as you could find in terms of trying to create independence. That's why the auditor ended up not under the CFO, not under the CEO, but with essentially a direct reporting relationship to the audit committee of the board. And the last thing that you should think about every time you discuss this is every once in a while, the general counsel or their department has to circle the wagons and defend the company. And that means we have a beautiful legal system. Somebody defends, looks at all the good news, and kind of doesn't think much about the bad news. The prosecutor looks at the bad news and doesn't really think much about the good news. And then judge, jury, or mediator, or maybe a settlement occurs, where people sort out who's got the best point. It's a beautiful system. It's better than any in the world. But a compliance officer is supposed to be the individual who brings leadership all the information, the good news, the bad news, maybe an outside legal opinion from an independent source who's done the same sort of thing about 10 times and says, here's the good news, here's the bad news. We have to fix something or we don't. If we have to fix it, here's why. And if you're in the middle of defending the company from prosecution, it's difficult to support the gathering and the presentation of every single last piece of information. It's just counter to the process. And that may not be the best argument I've ever made for the being self-aware of when you have to circle the wagons. But suffice it to say, a compliance officer has to be independent. It's a must. It's a fundamental principle. And that means that they can't be reporting to the defense or the prosecution. It makes no sense. They have to report to someone who has not been assigned the task of taking a biased perspective.
So with the other thing that sort of intrigued me was how your formulation really broke down the silos we see in many corporations.
Right.
An internal audit silo, yeah. An HR silo, certainly a compliance silo, a legal silo. You could even expand it out to trade compliance silo. If a company had money laundering issues, they might be siloed. And there's really no, certainly no cross-fertilization, but there's not even a cross-planting of soil.
Yeah.
If we go back to your horticulture days. But the siloed nature of the corporation seems to me to be one of the most ineffective ways to have a compliance program.
I'm going to regret this, but I'm going to follow up on your horticulture comment. To grow plants, a farmer has to have several things. Sun, water, fertilizer, soil, and one not commonly known is aeration in the soil. Good farmers do a good job of making sure that soil has a lot of air pockets for plants to grow in. Now, some of it they can't affect, like the climate, but they can affect everything else. There's tractors and there's soil and there's air and water and fertilizer. Those things don't make or break they're all critical, but they don't make or break the deal. The farmer who coordinates all those pieces to the best of their ability makes a successful farming season or not. I'm gonna say it's the same thing as a compliance officer. There's audit and education, investigation, there's the hotline, ethical training, these sorts of things. We don't even necessarily need to do each of the pieces that have been around forever, but we're siloed and not coordinated. All we have to do is coordinate the pieces. I'll give you a great example that we talked about today. If a problem is found and fixed, hopefully early, but maybe let's say it went on for a couple of years and now somebody's got to be fired. In either case, whether you found it early and you could just slap somebody in the wrist or late and you got to fire somebody, you're crazy if you don't go back and do some education. Or if you don't go back and put in a control that'll help prevent that problem from happening real time at the source of the creation of the problem. And that's kind of what happened in the past. Audit would go audit and say, I saw it. I saw that problem over there, and I'm telling you, there is a problem over there. And somebody might go over and investigate and say, well, I've investigated, I've looked at case law, that's a real problem. And they point back to the problem and say, that's the horrible problem. And the ethicist might come by and say, the guy who did it is a terribly bad guy. And they point their finger at the bad guy. And where the people point at the problem, they point at the process, they point at the bad guy. I call them the pointer sisters. Everybody's pointing in the past. Well, really, the thing that was missing is someone to come in like we talked about earlier and clean it up. So, you know, you could hire a compliance officer and not necessarily hire a couple hundred people, and they could still be pretty successful if they just go around to all these silos and make sure there was some communication back and forth between the discovery of a problem and education, the discovery of a problem and the implementation of controls to prevent the problem from happening again. That's another thing. You know, in the past, when we found a problem and investigated it, there was as much effort to keep it quiet and on a need-to-know basis as possible. And that's right. It's still important. I know you know this way better than I. Don't be running up down the hall with your hair on fire. But you're a fool, and I don't use that word often. It's also not a good thing to ever start a sentence where there's a special place in hell. I learned that a long time ago from somebody I know who tried it. I made a note never to start a sentence that way. I probably shouldn't be saying a fool, but
Did you pass that along to Madeline Albright?
I actually remembered that I learned that years ago after Madeline. And you know, I got to tell you, there's another deal. She's innocent until proven guilty. I heard an explanation from her about that. You know, we're also quick to jump on people. She said a sentence she said for 25 years. Probably shouldn't be said, but said it for 25 years without one word. She laced it into a context she didn't intend to lace it into.
Right.
And got, in a way, justifiably beat up by it. But, you know, good people can make mistakes. And before we prosecute them, we probably ought to assume they're innocent until proven guilty. Maybe listen. I don't
know. Well, except that my 19-year-old daughter told me on the phone, I'm not going to hell. So it really offended a constituency of people.
Yeah, you know, I tweeted out the other day, by the way, that, you know, my elderly advice now to these people running for office is you should use their quiet voice. I'm not the one to ask for rational, calm behavior, right? But I certainly do appreciate it when I see it. But get back to this discussion about silos. I've often referred to our job as a compliance program and a compliance officer as the goo in the middle. And it's not a professional description that you're going to be able to use in meetings at work, unless you're a creative individual. But all the pieces of a compliance program have been around forever. What's the difference? It's the orchestration is what you're talking about, Tom. What you're talking about, Tom, is the preventing the pieces from being siloed and working them all together.
Let me see if I can go at it a different way, because I've really been thinking about this for several months, and we explored this a little bit on a previous podcast, but I think the chief compliance officer has become, if not the one of the most important officers at the C-suite for those reasons. And those reasons are that only the compliance professional either has to bring together all of the disparate disciplines within a company to do compliance, or they have pushed compliance down into the DNA of the company so much that every one of those disciplines is doing compliance, overseen by a compliance professional. And there's not one person the CEO can go to and get information across those disciplines. And I haven't been able to fully flesh that out or articulate it in writing well enough to put it out there, but it really seems to me, particularly after the scandals we saw in the fall of 2015, and how compliance is really the only function in a company that can fully protect the company.
Right. While you were talking about it, I was thinking about the most successful compliance program acts almost like a virus, or it infects everything in the building. Much like the flip side is unethical behavior can be considered a virus. If the folks at the top lie, cheat, and steal, people down the trenches are going to lie, cheat, and steal, and a bad culture spreads like a virus.
Right.
A good culture is spread like a virus, and a compliance program can either be run by some compliance officer demanding to get all the employees that they can get, and they wall them off and put them in a room and audit and monitor and educate and all that, or you could be one of those compliance officers that doesn't get a very big budget. Rather than whine and cry about it, you go to the every stinking department in the building and say, let's sit down and figure out how you can do some of this. I got a phone call. I told this story earlier today in the presentation. I got a phone call from somebody who, I have a lot of people who have read some of the stuff I've written, and they kind of know me before they call, and they expect me to have a certain perspective. And usually that perspective, is safe to say, is I have pretty much anybody in the profession's back, because I advocate for the profession so much, so strongly and passionately and over the top and all these things. And she called up and said, you know, the guys in audit and maybe HR were trying to take over some of her compliance stuff, and there's going to be a board meeting tomorrow or a meeting compliance committee, and I got to have some ammunition, right? I got to have what you got. I got to tell them to stay out of my business. And she had skipped over the part to even ask my opinion. She just assumed, I thought, that them taking some of compliance was a bad idea. And I said, you know, I got a problem. I don't have a problem with this. If somebody wants to do my work, I'm going to say okay, you know. Now, there's a caveat to all this in a second. But if audit wants to do some auditing, legal wants to do some investigating, somebody wants to do some ethics training, and somebody else wants to do a risk assessment, I'll let them do it all day long. By the way, just before I saw you, I saw a study by KPMG, which said that the leadership thinks that the internal auditor is more helpful. I hope I read this right. This is dangerous using data you just read over your phone in a lobby. But it seemed to indicate leadership likes internal audit's role as in risk. In lowering risk, assessing risk, whatever. But they like it more that audit helps them maintain the net, that maintain the profit of the organization by looking for, finding, and fixing problems that where the company is not coming out well financially. And that's a little bit of a problem, because I told this woman, you know, let audit do whatever they want. But if all they're going to do all day is a bunch of cute little studies, find people who are ripping off the company so they can look good to the CEO, the audit department's no help to you. But if the audit department is going to go out and do audits to find out whether the company is filing incorrect financials or doing something else that outward facing that is a problem, then let them do all that work. And I told her, I would take all the resources I get. And then if you get to the level you're talking about, Tom, where you don't just see it as involving others and unsiloing, but you create this culture of everybody is involved in compliance. Everybody's committed to compliance. Compliance, I've never thought about this, I gotta be careful, but it should be like a virus. It should spread to everyone. Everybody do their part. Let everybody do it. The exception is, if they go do an audit and point to the problem and walk away, you salute, you say thank you, and you take over from there.
Right.
If they only audit half of what you want, you say thanks for doing half of it, and you go do the other half yourself. So you're the goo in the middle. You got to fill the cracks. You got to finish, and you got to involve everybody like you're talking about, and make your life as easy as possible.
Well, Roy, we're at the end of the time for this podcast, so probably should sign off, but look forward to continuing the conversation.
Thank you very much, Tom.